This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Visit FUBARradio.com for more details.
Viv Groskopf on FUBAR Radio.
Hello! Hi, welcome to the Lucy Porter Show with not Lucy Porter. It's me, Viv Groskopf. I'm standing in for Lucy this week. Hi, Lucy, if you're listening. So excited to be here, quite overwhelmed. I've only ever been a guest on this show before, so I'm very excited to be here. Now, as usual, we have got Amanda and Laura in the studio, and we have two fabulous guests this week. We've got comedian Jojo Smith, who I'm very excited to meet, and also from Mumsnet, deputy editor Kate Williams.
Yes.
And we're going to be talking about all manner of things, such as Mrs. Thatcher's wardrobe. Some very controversial this week that the V&A have rejected that. Not fashionable enough, apparently.
Not even a handbag. They didn't even want the handbag in there.
No, they nixed the handbag, they nixed the blue suits, they nixed everything. So we'll just... I want to ask Jojo, actually, what she thinks of that, because she's quite fashionable. And we'll also be talking about, I hope, the end of Downton Abbey. Although nobody cares about this. Nobody's still watching it, apart from me, because I blog about it. Also, I want to introduce something a bit rude later on as well, from the stand-up comic Margaret Cho, who has a couple of fabulous new extremely rude tracks. Which are quite controversial, very interesting, come out this week. And also we're going to be discussing the new UK passport design, which features a paltry 2 women and 5 men. And it's just, it's all wrong. It's wrong. So, but first of all, let's hear from our fabulous album of the week, which is Jess Glynn.
Yeah, and I think the first track that we'll play is Hold My Hand.
Standing in a crowded room and I can't see your face. Put your arms around me, tell me everything's okay. In my mind I'm running around a cold and empty space. Just put your arms around me, tell me everything's okay.
Darling, hold my hand.
Radio.
Hi, this is Viv Groskop in for Lucy Porter on the Lucy Porter Show, not the Lucy Porter Show tonight on FUBAR Radio. That was Jess Glynn, Hold My Hand, one of my summer favourites. Now, Amanda, we want to talk about, first of all, this scandal of the UK passport featuring no women, but it's
well,
not
it was
no
as
women,
good as
two women. And I got the numbers wrong before, being a woman, obviously I would. It's 7 men featured and 2 women. This has come out this week. It's a new UK passport design. So we're talking about the pages that are kind of franked, you know, in the way. Is that the correct terminology? Franked?
No, because you frank post, don't you? But I know what you mean. It's kind of got a watermark, isn't it?
Yes, watermarked. Yeah. That's it. Not knowledgeable enough about marking. Yeah. So it's those pages, and they have the same kind of design as a cash note. I'm not very well versed in this kind of business.
They've got birds on them now, haven't they?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, featuring just 2 women in
two
its
birds.
30. Yes, 2 birds.
It's only 2 birds.
In its 34 pages. And I think it's very interesting, actually, the men that they featured, the creative UK United Kingdom passport unveiled by Immigration Minister James Brokenshire includes portraits of John Harrison, inventor of the longitude clock, painter John Constable, him we know, architect Giles Gilbert Scott, and Charles Babbage, mathematician and father of the computer.
I mean,
this is great, you know, let's celebrate. But yes, no women. So already there's been a real outcry, particularly from the same people who were campaigning to have Jane Austen on the £10 note, saying, why couldn't they have included more women? And we're asking for your suggestions of who on earth they should have included, because they've included artists Anish Kapoor and Anthony Gormley. I don't see why there's no Tracy Emin, for example. Other ones suggested have been Maggie Hambling, Cornelia Parker, Tacita Dean, Sarah Lucas, Rachel White-Read, all contemporaries of those artists, Barbara Hepworth, Bridget Riley, Mary Quant, Shakespeare, No Room for Charlotte Bronte, J.K. Rowling, Muriel Spark, Carol Ann Daffy, Jackie Kay, Mary Wollstonecraft, Virginia Woolf. Where are they all?
Yeah, so that's where I think the listeners come in, isn't it? We should start creating our own list, and we could even hand it into the powers that be as a suggestion, couldn't we?
We could
find out who they are. I don't know who.
Yeah, we could storm Parliament with our tweets.
Not tonight though, because I really want to go home and watch The Apprentice later. But,
okay, all right. Yeah, this is kind of things like that have stopped feminism making as many strides as perhaps it could have done, Amanda. Thank you. Well, so please do tweet us your suggestions at FUBAR Radio. And I love the response of the poor Director General of the Passport Office, Mark Thompson, who has had to defend himself.
Right, yeah.
I shouldn't be showing him any sympathy, should I? But I do sort of feel a bit sorry for him. He says, it wasn't something where we set out to only have 2 women. In trying to celebrate UK creativity over the last 500 years, we tried to get a range of locations, a range of things around the country, and to celebrate our triumphs and icons over the years. So there we are. I love the way he says, so there we are.
Let's hear no more of it.
Yeah, but I love that there's already a sort of big Twitter storm about this. And that's what's great about social media now, is that people get to voice their opinion. I mean, it's too late, isn't it? So maybe that's not so great.
Is it?
But they've done it now, haven't they? They've made the passport. They've printed them. They've franked it.
Right. They've still franked it. Yeah. That is a shame, isn't it?
But then stop calling it franking, really, shouldn't we?
We'll call it watermarking. I mean,
we did establish that already, and I forgot. Sorry.
I don't think that's the bigger issue here, you see. That's why you're not remembering that.
Women shouldn't be in public life, you see. I can't understand the difference between watermarking and franking.
Well, so I think, even though it might be deemed too late for this time round, but how often do they reprint these?
Well,
this is
a special Creative United Kingdom passport.
Right.
And it's not clear to me why exactly it's been brought out at this particular time. But I guess if we make enough of a fuss, they won't do it again. I suppose. I love that... this is brought up though, this term herstory. I don't know if you ever heard that.
Instead of saying
history,
sure, yes,
you say herstory to represent the lack of women adequately represented by conventional history. And there's a hashtag now, tell her story.
Yes.
Get what they've done there?
Yeah, I do. Yes, yeah, I think that's...
And
yeah.
Stella Creasy has been tweeting a lot about this. And she's one of the people who has been suggesting Mary Wollstonecraft and Virginia Woolf, for example. And she tweeted, so tired of this shizzle. Home Office could only find two UK women to celebrate in 500 years of history.
Yes, Stella, that is rubbish shizzle.
Yeah, put an end to that shizzle watermarking.
Right, well, I think that's a good list to be going on with, so people can tweet that info at FUBA. Actually, I was going to ask, are these people getting much hate at the moment for... kind of suggesting that there's not enough women being represented in the, because we all know what happened with the notes and Caroline Lucas.
You want to know whether the trolls have come out
yet? Yeah, they come out yet, or they've been busy with Halloween?
No, I don't think so. I don't think this is going to grow into such a storm, actually. And it's interesting. Well, it's good and bad. I think that some of the heat's been taken off these kind of things by the founding of the Women's Equality Party, because now there's a direction for that and people can address their concerns to there, which in a way is a good thing. But in another way, I don't think these things manage to get such a lot of momentum anymore.
Right, right.
Perhaps I'm being a bit negative.
Well, let's build the momentum right here.
Yeah, go crazy.
In the FUBAR studio. Well, I think it's time that we brought in lovely Laura, who's going to... tell us what she's been up to this week. And also, she's going to introduce her track. And I've actually heard of the artist that she's... normally, I don't have a clue who her track is for. Yeah, we're not shutting that door, Laura. We know why.
There's a real broken door handle.
Yeah, this is a recurring nightmare.
Today. Hi, Laura.
Hi,
Laura. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Welcome to the Not Lucy Porter Show.
Yeah, it's going well so far.
Yeah, so the first 12 minutes have been pretty sensational.
Yeah.
This is the moment where you tell us what you've been up to.
It's quite boring because I just live here, so...
You do appear to live here.
Or Shitty Beers.
Yes.
Which is the bar next door.
Yeah.
Can you give us an update on the broken door handle situation?
It's currently still broken.
How long has it been like this?
About a week.
It's a bit of an off and on thing, isn't it? It's an off and on thing. It's a building issue.
Just to explain to anyone listening, basically the door to the studio it's sometimes not possible to open it.
Yeah.
So people get trapped inside.
Yeah, so the previous show that we're in here, they were actually trapped inside and we couldn't get in.
It always happens at crucial moments.
Always, doesn't it? And then when I was here on Monday producing another show, the door handle completely came off in my hand and... yeah, they were stuck in here for a little while, but it was okay because they were on air. So.
It makes us look really good as well.
But it's a building issue. So yes. Yeah, they need to get that
great.
Sorted.
Broken
out.
Britain strikes again.
It's quite funny because usually Lucy Porter, she has like clothes with Pimm's and stuff, and we've got green tea.
We've got green tea.
I have brought a packet of green tea, and I know that this is slightly austere compared to Lucy's usual gifts to this program. Are you already saying that you don't like me because I should have brought you alcohol?
No.
I don't think Laura
I'm just saying it's quite a contrast.
Yes. Well, this was because I'm trying to pander to our guest, comedian Jojo Smith, who will be on the show later. I tweeted her to ask, what would you like to drink? Thinking that I could bring her... Well, you know, because I know that she's had a bit of a rock and roll past, so I was getting ready for, you know, a bottle of Jack Daniels or whatever it is that the rock and rollers drink. And she tweeted back and said, I only drink green tea.
Mm.
So that's what I've brought for
her. That's her rider.
Yes.
Some green tea.
You know, that's the 21st century for you, you see.
Well, we do normally tuck into a few beverages, but I spent a lot of time looking at the bottom of a glass last night, so I'm not really feeling it tonight,
yeah,
Laura.
Neither.
I don't know about you. Yeah. Shall we find out? Laura, I've actually heard of your artist this week.
Yeah, I thought I'd go a bit more upbeat this week.
Yeah, what was it last week? It was a bit of a...
Sex Witch.
That's right. Great name, but a bit of a dirge.
Yeah.
Bit of a dirge, but it was interesting.
Yes. Well, this week I picked Grimes.
Ooh, I quite
have
like
you
Grimes.
Heard of Grimes?
Yeah, I love Grimes.
Grimes
is no crime. Grime against music. Grimes.
Yeah.
I love Grimes.
Good rhymes.
How do you spell Grimes?
Like Grimes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I really
is
like
it connected
this song.
To Nick Grimes. Grimshaw.
Grimshaw.
Grimmy. No, I don't think
okay,
so.
No, forget I said that.
Yeah, well, I thought I'd go more upbeat this week with Grimes' new song.
I've actually already heard this song as well.
Really?
I am feeling quite with it this week, Laura. Shall I play it?
Yes, you shall.
Would you like to introduce and say what it's called?
It is called Flesh Without Blood, is that it?
Yeah.
Not so nice title.
Not a great title, but pretty rocking song. Here we go.
Welcome back. This is Viv in for Lucy Porter. And that was Grimes. Ooh. Flesh and not blood. Is that what it was called?
Flesh without blood.
Flesh
Close.
Without blood. Mm. What a rousing track that was. My first from Grimes. Great. Now, this is the section of the show where we welcome Kate Williams, Deputy Editor of Mumset. Hurrah!
Hello.
Welcome, Kate. This is your first time on the show.
It is, yes.
Welcome. It's lovely to see you. Now, we were just talking with Amanda about this new UK passport design, which is featuring only two women and seven men's.
Outrage.
Yes. Not very good.
What's the excuse?
Well, the excuse is that out of 500 years of history, they could only manage to conjure up two women who are Elizabeth Scott, architect of the Royal Shakespeare Theatre in Stratford-upon-Avon, yeah, and Ada Lovelace, the mathematician who worked alongside Babbage on the analytical engine. Yeah. These are apparently the only two women who made much of a mark over the last five centuries. Who would you like to have seen on there? Their suggestions have included Jane Austen, Mary Wollstonecraft.
Any one of those two women you just came up with.
It's not difficult, is it?
It's really not difficult. We could have had George Eliot. We could have had... Who else? God, I've suddenly gone horribly blank on women from history.
A woman with a man's name. Everybody would be happy.
I think that would be a great compromise.
Excellent.
Florence Nightingale.
Yes, Florence Nightingale would have been brilliant. Yes. I mean, why don't they think of these things? They don't consult us. Now, one forum they could have consulted, of course, would have been Mumsnet. But they probably would have received a lot of abuse.
Well, I think they would have received constructive advice on how not to have 2 out of 8 or 10 people being female.
You can't count either. I got the numbers wrong earlier. Yes, but let's talk about what everyone's been discussing on Mumsnet this week. Now we are heading towards my favourite section of Mumsnet.
Am I being unreasonable? Is the title of the board, yeah.
And you can reply to people, you are not being unreasonable.
Yambu.
So who's been asking whether they're being reasonable or not this week? What have people been asking?
Well, people have been asking not whether they're being unreasonable, but they've been talking about the crap they spouted before they had kids. There's a brilliant thread in which people list the various completely erroneous beliefs they had before they actually had a baby about what having a baby would be like and what being a parent would be like.
Because before you have a baby, you just think you know it all.
You do think you know it all, or you don't think about it at all, in my case. But yes, lots of people had very firm ideas about the things, the kind of parenting styles that they would... be following when they had kids. Lots of people said, well, the OP, the person who started the thread, said she...
Hang on, back up. Yeah. The OP, original poster.
Person who actually started the thread, it's titled Crap You Spouted Before You Had Kids.
Which is called Pre-DC.
Pre-DC.
Before Dear Children.
Is that correct?
Let's bone up on this.
So, and DD, she mentions her DD, which is her
dear daughter.
Mm-hmm. So she decided that her DD would not eat chocolate until she was at a birthday party at school and there was no excuse. And that would be her first taste of chocolate. There'd be no TV at all until she was age 3, and then only in extreme situations. And she imagined her house full of lovely wooden educational toys, looking like a lovely sort of Scandi interiors ad. And then the other thing, which rang very, very true with me, that she says that when she's on maternity leave, she's probably going to do that online diploma that she... had always wanted to do. So that's what she was...
And then she says, oh, how I laugh at how much of a twat I was as my daughter often sits watching Peppa Pig whilst eating buttons before playing with her plastic tat whilst I try and figure out how I'm going to fit a shower in before work.
Yes, that's right. And the shower.
That is the reality.
We've all been there. And she says she spouted this to people who had kids and they had the good grace not to punch her. So, I mean, I think people are very, very tolerant of people who are just about to embark on the parenting journey.
I think this is such a sweet thread. I don't want to be mean to Mumsnetters who I adore and who are hilarious. And let's remember as well, these things are always anonymous and we all go a bit crazy when it gets anonymous. But often the threads are not always massively self-deprecating. And this one is very self-deprecating and they're all laughing at themselves
I think Mumsnetters are very self-deprecating on the whole, unless... You know, and if it's a heated debate, then people get heated about things that they care a lot about. But yeah, there's lots of self-deprecation here. People talk about the foreign language that they were going to master on maternity leave, and also lots of people talking about things like, you know, absolutely determined not to use dummies, and then obviously that goes out the window very, very quickly. No letting kids into bed, and then, you know, I think we've all been there with one or two or more children in your bed, and somebody here describes it as a wrestling smackdown in her bed these days.
It's very sweet, isn't it?
And lots of people talking about kids.
People's
ruined lives. Lives ruined by children. Kids eating only what the adults eat. That doesn't always pan out as one would hope or expect.
I love the one that says, I would be a cool parent, she thought to herself before having children, who wouldn't stress about homework, staying out late, drugs, etc., and so produced a balanced, rounded teenager stroke young adult, ha-fucking-ha. There's a lot of bitterness there, isn't there? Love it when the bitterness creeps in.
Yeah, maybe just tiredness, I think. I think that, yeah, the being a cool parent thing, that's hard to carry through, definitely. Somebody else says, which I think is just completely amazing, she says that her friend had said that her own husband, this is how her husband planned to get the kids, the baby off to sleep, she said that her husband would just read his political memoir book out loud to soothe the baby to sleep. That was their, that was her parenting plan. So
that could work very well. Just outsource putting the baby to sleep to audiobooks. That'd be good. I love this one.
Michael Gove's memoir.
She thought to herself, well, actually, no, it's not a man. It has to be a woman. Sorry. Now you'll see why I don't have biology GCSE. She thought to herself, I'm going to breastfeed. It can't be hard. Parents that don't do it must just be lazy. Then it says, I lasted a week, an agonising, tear-filled week.
Oh, gosh, poor woman. Yeah.
But this is, that's what's great about Mumsnet again, you see. It's where you get to vent and other people say, no, it's okay. I too am a rubbish parent.
Yes, everyone's been there. Did you have any parenting preconceptions yourself?
I feel quite smug about this in that I thought I was going to be a bit of a rubbish parent, and I was, and I am. Somebody just asked me, okay, you just asked me how old my children are, and I couldn't remember, but they are 5, 9 and 11, so I have been doing this for quite a while now, and it hasn't really got any easier, but then I never took it that seriously, so it wasn't that difficult either. I was very... I'm also very stubborn, you see. So with the breastfeeding, I made it work, even though blood was pouring from every orifice. Yeah. Sorry, listeners.
Just because you weren't going to fail.
Yes.
Whatever happened.
Exactly. Yeah. So anything that didn't suit my worldview, I either abandoned it before I'd thought of it, or I just went ahead with it anyway.
Yes.
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 I remember
thinking,
blood and guts.
Thinking that people whose toddlers were tantruming were just not doing it right. And if they could just get down to the kids' level and speak in a calm tone of voice and rationalise things and be reasonable with their children, with their toddler, that their toddler would realise that they were being unreasonable and would, you know, stop doing that tantruming thing. And that didn't work out very well. I remember walking back from a friend's house after my two-year-old had just refused to have another nappy put on, and I was walking, it was pouring with rain, my child was naked in the buggy, screaming one long scream that didn't seem to end for about, you know, for the 20-minute journey home, and I was crying as well. Learning the lesson the hard way, that actually being reasonable with toddlers doesn't always work.
No, because they're not reasonable back. Well, it went a bit Jeremy Kyle there then with the naked child in the buggy. So let's move swiftly on to a track, Amanda. Yeah. Shall we have another track from our album of the week?
Well, I was actually
Jess
going
Glynn.
To say we're going to have Kate's.
Oh, it's
track.
Time for Kate's track.
Yes.
Track. What is your track?
I was excited about this one, Kate.
Does it take you back?
It does. Very much so, yes.
So my track is Connection by Elastica.
Oh, excellent.
Here it is now.
Is made. Lying on anything, anything.
That was Connection by Elastica, the track of the week from Kate Williams, Deputy Editor of Mumsnet, who is our fabulous guest. Now, we are discussing what everyone's been talking about on Mumsnet this week. We've done the regrets that people have over the stupid things that they thought to themselves before they became parents. But this week, there has been an absolute vintage Mumsnet query, somebody who required assistance. Tell us about that, Kate.
So this poor lady comes onto Mumsnet and she starts a thread that says, "This is Mumsnet. Someone will have done this before," because she's looking for advice on her problem. She says, "I've melted the rug onto my hair."
It's beautiful. Can I read out the name of the poster?
Yes,
seeing as
yes,
it's anonymous.
Yep.
She is called Meatloaf Snickers. Meatloaf Snickers, and she says, "What a tool! I have globs of melted rug smeared all over my hair. Do I remelt it with the GHDs, i.e. hair straighteners, or do I let it dry? Will I need to go a grade one all over?" Then there's a shocked face emoticon. And immediately the replies come back, "Sorry, but how did you manage that? When you say rug, are we talking about a wig or a faux Persian actual rug? And how the actual fuck? Were you laying down straightening your hair?" I love the person who's called Rafa, the King of Clay. "I'm afraid I haven't done that before, so I will be of no help."
But amazingly, later on during the thread, because it is Mumsnet, somebody has done it before and does offer advice. But should we backtrack to explain what happened exactly?
So
basically she's put her hair straighteners down on the rug, and hair straighteners are the hair tool of the devil, and unbeknownst to her, it's melted the shag pile, so it's got stuck onto the straighteners, and then when she picked them up and used them on her hair, she accidentally fused bits of ruggy wool to her hair, which was now presumably sitting crisply on the top of her head, on the very crown of her head, she says. So it's quite visible.
Lord.
And it's quite a surreal thread. It's, as you say, it's one of those wonderful Mumsnet threads.
And the smell is rank.
The smell is
rank. And I have a date tomorrow.
Oh,
and
no.
The best thing about the date bit is she says it's a blind date, and then she adds crucially, "not literally," because of course if it was literally a blind date, then that would solve the problem. And if her date had actually been blind.
I haven't scrolled down enough to see if she does eventually post a photograph. There are requests,
she doesn't. She clings to her anonymity. Perhaps she feels that she's shared enough.
Please share with us, Kate, what the eventual solution is.
I don't know whether I was more interested in the kind of what the actual facts.
Somebody seems to suggest the brushing it out.
I think she brushes it out, and eventually it's not so bad. She says also that the rug hair, the ruggy bit of the hair, the rug is grey, so it it blends in a bit. I don't know.
It's going to be a new fashion.
Absolutely.
This is how the fashion started, for people dyeing the bottom half of their hair.
Terrible hair straightened
and
disaster.
And now it could just be having a lump of carpet fused into your hair.
She says she's already got an undercut, you know, which is where people have long hair on top and it's kind of cropped at the side. So she can't even take a kind of drastic solution. She talks about maybe wearing a fascinator to cover it up, but then she decides that that's possibly a bit formal for a pub lunch, which is where she's going to have the blind date. And somebody on Mumsnet, which is absolutely a kind of perfect Mumsnet response, says, "Leave it. If asked, say matter-of-factly, I've fused the rug to my hair," and depending on his response, that will let you know whether he's a keeper or not. So if
he laughs,
if the blind man gets out of his chair and runs, blind date, yes.
Blind date man.
And if he can't handle it, then, you know, he's not worth keeping around. And somebody else says that, to be fair, it's a brilliant conversation piece. There's lots to talk about on your blind date.
It's really going quite far to have a conversation piece, isn't it? Gluing some carpet into your hair. You must be very anxious about your personality to obtain conversation.
What I love about
this as well is that, you know, in the olden days, there'd be loads of old wives' tales, and everyone would always know how to get a stain out of a shirt, or, you know, how to starch some bed sheets or something. Here, someone suggests putting peanut butter in their hair to get rid of this. Now, that is not right, is it?
That's not right. I think that's probably based on previous, because there's been previous hair-based disasters on Mumsnet. One poor woman got a child's toy car tangled in her hair to the degree that she couldn't get it out of her hair. And the solution eventually was found with the builders who were working next door, who she called in and asked to detangle the child's toy car from her hair, so that
once
was
they finished laughing.
Once I did, they didn't. They sound like very sensible builders who.
What did
who
they use?
Rose to the challenge. They had to, you know, detangle very carefully from the axles of the. Of the toy car.
Oh, you see, this is again where feminism falls down. A man was required to detangle the axles.
I don't know what an axle is.
It's all very technical. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Now, what the other thing I love, now this is slightly related, and this one slightly worried me, the one about the pillows and the duvet.
Yeah.
This, again, is the sort of thing I think you would have known about in the 1950s with no hesitation.
Your mother would have told you.
It's this Cherry Blossom is saying, I was checking how to wash my pillows, and I have found out that I'm supposed to wash my duvet every 3 to 4 months. Is this true? She asks anxiously. Immediately, Majestic C-flap-flap replies, oh, shit, I don't think I've ever washed mine.
Yeah, along with many, many others.
Yeah.
Yeah, people are split though, aren't they? Because there's lots on Mumsnet. Whenever these people are kind of really interested to know whether their personal or domestic hygiene standards meet those of other people, or whether they're actually terrible slatterns, and you can usually divide people into those who are kind of not very domesticated, not very much into washing their duvets and proud of it, and other people who kind of basically do it every week and
yes.
make everyone else feel slightly anxious.
Yes.
I felt slightly anxious reading
that
thread.
I wonder if the people who are sort of in the middle don't go on these threads.
No, but we all read them.
The ones who are really disgusting and don't give a shit, they don't go on the thread. That's,
no, I think they do. People are quite, you know.
On this one, I love One Dog, a Toddler and a Baby, who writes, I do mine, but even the king size one fits in a domestic 7 kilo capacity washing machine, so it is no effort. I usually wash when we change from a 4.5 tog to a 9 tog.
Ugh.
So I'll do the 9 tog and dry when getting out of the cupboard. Then when changed over, the 4.5 tog will be washed prior to packing away. I'll wash both again when it's time to swap again next spring.
I admire
her. Nobody wants to be friends with you.
No, I would not want to go out for a drink with her.
She's probably lovely, but very organised, much more organised than the rest of us. And also, if you have a 7 kilo washing machine, that does change things a bit, doesn't it?
But I don't even know the capacity of my washing machine, let alone the top.
Could you get a king size duvet into your washing machine? I couldn't get one into mine.
I don't think I've
ever tried.
Mm.
I have to confess, I did find myself reading this thread and thinking, get a job. Is that bad?
It's bad because she probably has a very high powered job.
I suppose you could have a job and care.
I do get my duvets washed. I don't just leave them forever. Somebody said she waits till bodily fluids are involved, children's bodily fluids.
Back on the penis beaker now, aren't we? The infamous.
We're veering dangerously close.
Question.
I think if bodily fluids are heavily involved, I would take it to the laundrette.
Mm. Okay, good advice there. Mm. Good life advice.
From one who knows.
Now, what's your favourite one, Case, out of all of these?
Well, I think the hairdresser's one, the hair straightener's one is absolutely fantastic. Somebody else came up with a fantastic idea, which I thought was, you know, if anyone is out there with seed funding, this is Mumsnet is the place to come for excellent ideas that will do really well. So it's related to hairdressers, to hair again. Some poor person comes on and says, am I being unreasonable to think that hairdressers should be legally obliged to tell you before they do topiary on your hair? So it's basically about hairdressers going wildly off-piste. You go in, she said, I had my eyes shut against the snippets, which is a great image. And she was holding forth relentlessly about her cousin's dog. And by the time I realised what was going on, it was too late and my once perfect fringe was laid to buggery. And now my head looks all pointy and it'll take months to grow back. Wail. And I think we've all been there, haven't we? That horrible feeling when you realise that the hairdresser has not listened to your one inch off and has kind of got creative on you. There were so many stories of horrible haircuts.
I've been made to have my scalp bleed. And I didn't really complain that much, actually.
No, but that's
because
the thing.
One must suffer to be beautiful.
Ill-faced
was
career.
It scissors in the scalp?
No, it was bleach. That's what bleach can do to you.
Somebody comes on to the thread and says, I am currently sitting in the hairdresser's because she has literally shaved a bald spot above my ear this morning, about 2 inches square. The manager said, fuck, and started tearing up. They've suggested bleaching it so you can't tell that there's so much of a difference between the bald flesh-coloured spots.
Oh, I love
the
that.
Rest of her
it's
hair.
All right. We'll just change your hair to flesh colour.
Change your hair, yeah.
But is she? What's her hair colour now? I mean, because dark, and then suddenly she's walking out with a bleached head.
Yes, it would make the bald patch less visible, but it might not be the solution to the whole. I want a nice haircut.
That's not what she went in there for.
It's not what she.
What was the opportunity that you were mentioning?
Well, the opportunity is somebody suggests, and everyone goes, "Yeah, yeah, that's a brilliant idea." Snip Advisor, so which is like Trip Advisor for hairdressers.
Genius.
It's a genius idea. You go in, you rate your hairdresser, you tell them, you know, you'd be very just as able to praise as well as offer constructive criticism.
Yes.
And then other people can go and see whether your hairdresser is likely to go completely off piste. It's a really, really, really good idea.
Paging Lord Sugar.
Paging Lord Sugar, indeed.
This is fabulous.
So that's really good, yeah. And some other people come up with interesting. Somebody says, which I think is very truthful, that she has a theory that hairdressers only have one hairstyle that they can do. So really the key to finding the hairdresser of your dreams is finding the hairdresser that does the hairstyle that you want, and don't ask them to do anything else, just get them to do that hairstyle.
It could take years.
It does explain a lot. But you said just now that you didn't complain, and I think that's the thing, isn't it? You have a really weird relationship with your hairdresser, which is that in some respects I don't know about you, but I'm very honest with my hairdresser about other aspects of my life. Too much oversharing goes on with my hairdresser, who's lovely, by the way.
Excellent gamine cut.
Thank you very much. Because I just the straighteners. I got the straighteners for and decided to have it all off.
I can see a bit of carpet in there obviously.
It's the latest thing, you know. But then when they actually, you know, when you look in the mirror and it's and you look like Kevin Keegan or Pam Ayres or not, you know, poor Pam Ayres, but you know, it's not what you wanted. How many of us ever say, "This is not what I wanted, please do something about it, I'm not leaving until you do," or how many of us scuttle out tugging at it and then go and cry behind a corner?
Yes,
lots of us.
I think it's to do with money, because especially in London it's very expensive.
It is very expensive,
and I don't know why. Maybe it's a British thing. I just feel, I am the fool here, I'm the idiot.
Yes,
I'm spending all this money on this thing I don't
you
even
shouldn't
want
have tried to look I'm beautiful
too ashamed
in the first place. Yes.
I'm too ashamed to complain. I have had the best haircut I ever had when I asked for anything that will make me look less like Susan Boyle. And the hairdresser didn't even say, "Oh no, madam, you don't look at all like Susan Boyle." He just proceeded with his cut. It was very effective. I would suggest
very
that
effective.
To people.
I always say I don't want to look like a daytime TV presenter, and they do normally know what I mean.
Okay, I think you know, we've just had Elastica, and I think this is a sort of Elastica-esque look that you've
that
championed.
I'm working. Gosh, God, that's really depressing to think that my look hasn't changed since the 90s.
No, you've just rediscovered it.
Alas, that isn't true. I have been wearing the same clothes since 94.
Now, shall we, speaking of young people and rediscovering things, shall we have a track from our album of the week, Amanda?
Yeah, one would you like? So you can choose Ain't Got Far To Go, Gave Me Something, or No Rights, No Wrongs. Which one do you want?
Oh, let's go for No Rights, No Wrongs. This is Jess Glynn.
And we're going to have in lovely Jojo Smith now as well.
Fabulous.
While looking at heaven, found an answer, looking for a question. Not enough words to make a sentence. It's not easy to find a way. How much water to kill a fire? How many lows can take you higher? The only road to your desire. No!
Viv Groskop on FUBAR Radio.
Yay! Welcome back. It's Viv Groskop standing in on the Lucy Porter Show, and that was No Rights, No Wrongs by Jess Glynn, our album of the week. I'm very excited to welcome our latest guest. It's comedian Jojo Speer.
Hello. Woo!
Now, we raise a glass of green tea, yes. A cup of green tea, yes. To Jojo. Now, cheers. Jojo, you have had a checkered life, which we will discuss in a moment, but many rock and roll elements to, yes, your life, because, yes, you started life as a sort of rock and roll journalist, basically.
I did, yeah.
And so when I asked you today for your drink of choice, which I wanted to bring in for you, I was thinking it's going to be, you know, some kind of Harvey Wall Banger Slammer or
Sambuca.
Was that Sambuca? Yes, a flaming Sambuca. But no, you wanted green tea.
Yeah, and even that, you know, is a bit much, because it's quite lame for me to have caffeine now. That's how tedious. Let this be a warning, if there's any young women out there listening, enjoy yourselves while you can. Once 50 hits, tedium follows very quickly.
Excellent.
And it gets to, I get to about 8 o'clock, I can't really have any more liquid, or else I'm waking up in the night for a wee.
Excellent.
I used to do cocaine.
Welcome.
And have sex with strange men.
Okay, well, maybe tell us more about that and not so much about the weeing in the middle of the night. Welcome to Grumpy Old Women. Kate Williams from Mumsnet is still here. And now, Jojo, we were just discussing one of the brilliant threads on Mumsnet from this week about hair disasters. Some poor woman who'd managed to, I was going to say, sellotape the carpet to her hair, but
it was
worse than that. She got carpet stuck in her straighteners and then put it in her hair. I was just wondering if you've got a very beautiful, beautiful bob, one of the fringy, yes, bobs. Have you had any hair disasters?
Not since. I saw 9.5 weeks when it first came out, and went to my poor long-standing 30-year hairdresser and asked him to give me a perm to make me look like Kim Basinger Basinger. And I had dyed blonde hair at the time, and I came out looking like Shirley Temple on steroids. And so, yeah, and that was the last perm I ever had, and needless to say, Mickey Rourke weren't banging on my door. But God love him, I've had the same hairdresser since the mid-80s, and he's a Kiwi, and he moves hairdressers quite frequently, but I always seem to track him down. It's funny, he doesn't really tell me when he's coming. But I always managed to find him, so poor son.
This could be another thread, couldn't it? Has anybody stalked their hairdresser?
Yeah.
Kate, tell us before you go about your final favourite thread of this week.
So my final favourite thread is an Am I Being Unreasonable thread. Am I being unreasonable to ask if by royal decree you had to have a torrid affair, who would it be? And she says, if there's a risk of you get thrown into the tower, put in the stocks and all that malarkey if you refuse. She goes on to say, today I think I'd go for Ralph Fiennes. Look how pretty he is. Yes, he's all tortured and angsty and probably ponders endlessly on his craft, but he's just so alluring. And there then follows 600 posts of people, of mum's knitters, saying who they're, if they were forced to have a torrid affair, who they'd have a torrid affair with. So that's quite a lot of people, isn't it?
Yes, well, Tom Hardy comes up.
Yeah, a lot.
A lot. Sean Pertwee.
Sean Pertwee.
He looks like a right mucky bugger,
yeah,
someone says. Kenneth Branagh, we're in love. Well, he totally would fall in love with me if we met. And if he didn't already love his wife, shakes fist at Mrs. Branagh. Brilliant. Liam Neeson, David Beckham. I love this one.
Yeah.
Benedict, what's his face? The whole of the New Zealand rugby team, bit of rough. And the one who played Gene Hackman in Life on Mars.
That
covers October. I love the way that this has been phrased. You know, am I unreasonable to ask if you are ordered by royal decree? As if people aren't just gagging to write about how much they fancy Sean Pertwee. Any excuse.
Any
and everybody's
excuse.
Just on there rubbing their thighs like Vic Reeves.
There's very much a Vic Reeves tone to the thread, I think. Bradley Cooper, we've mentioned. Joaquin Phoenix, Michael Fassbender.
Joaquin Phoenix.
Joaquin Idris Elba. Hugh Jackman, spelt Huge Ackman. And then Mark from DIY SOS pops up. I can't quite picture Mark from DIY SOS, but I don't think he's probably... He's an unexpected addition to the list of...
Is he one of the actual handymen?
Stars. I think he might be.
That sounds like a mum's fancy, though, doesn't it? Because, you know, sort you out and fix your washing machine.
Yeah. Yeah, what about Steve Backshall?
Who's he?
Deadly 60. Oh, we can tell you don't have kids who are young enough. Steve Backshall.
I do remember him now. You say Deadly 60.
Rippling muscled host of Deadly 60 on CBBC. Now this is really embarrassing. he showcases many terrifying animals.
Yes.
It's always about tarantulas and sharks, and he goes very close to them and has to take off his shirt
because
he's got so stressed.
But there's a long running tradition of people sharing the children's TV presenter that they think is most attractive on Mumsnet. That who's that lovely guy who did the spiders? Do you remember that one? The Welsh guy.
I can't remember his name, it's completely gone.
Everyone universally agrees that he's a lovely man.
It's embarrassing, isn't it?
Well,
who would you choose, Kate, if it was by royal decree?
By royal decree. God, my mind's completely
Joaquin.
However
Joaquin
you pronounce
Phoenix.
It, he's very attractive.
Have you seen him in the new Woody Allen film?
No, I haven't.
Oh, well, that film's made for
list.
You. It's not made for anyone else.
Just me on my own in a big cinema.
Jojo, who would you choose? Perhaps the handyman?
No.
I thought you lit up at the thought of that.
Only, well, more about getting the jobs done. I'm beyond all of that. It's a very long story, which I'm sure we'll touch on.
But this is royal decree we're talking about.
I don't care.
You'd rather go in the
tower.
Stocks.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I've had my fill.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. Okay,
honestly,
you really are on the green tea now, in all senses,
in every sense,
aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. I have to say, for me, and I'm a bit embarrassed that this has just popped into my head, it would be Dan Stevens, who was in Downton Abbey.
So oh,
he's mentioned
Downton Abbey
again
now. Yeah.
But he used to be quite doughy. I hope he's not listening. And then he became really buff. And now he's, put the buff to use. That's what I say. Yes, don't know why he popped into my head. Very good.
Somebody else suggested Lorraine Kelly at some point, which threw me a little bit. But there you go.
Oh, these are modern times
they
that we're living
times.
In, even for the Mumsnet.
Yeah, and somebody
audience.
Else says David Gandy, the model.
Yes, Marks and Spencer's underwear model.
But he's quite popular. Greasy. And then someone says he looks like Dean Gaffney. And it's so true,
he
isn't it?
Does.
Now you've seen it, you can't unsee it.
Yes.
He does look like Dean
that
Gaffney.
That is so true.
Oh,
yes.
Oh no. Mm.
Oh,
long
so
lost.
Slitherings.
Is there a tradition of putting pictures up on these threads? Because I noticed somebody's put a Ralph Fiennes picture up for the eye candy. Do people do that a lot? Or do they
I don't think so. This was a particularly picture-laden thread, wasn't it?
Yes, were meant,
because
unusual.
Why wouldn't you if you want to... And also, you might not remember the names or, you want to bring other people up to speed on why you
I love the way
passion.
That, we've become so jaded now that the internet is no longer used for porn. It's just used for posting pictures of Ralph Fiennes and Dean Gaffney.
Yeah. It was a good picture of Ralph Fiennes there looking. He was looking soulful.
He was. Yep. It was very good. Mm. Huge Ackman. Ralph is nice, says Matilda the Cat, but he might be a bit poncy and highbrow for a torrid affair. George Clooney would never disappoint, surely. Matt Damon, .. Tom Hardy, but then I wouldn't want the affair to end, so I'd have to blackmail him into marrying me. And Enthusiasm Disturbed has written, I love beards. That's it.
I think that's in response to a picture of a man with a beard.
Who's Gerard Butler? Who is Gerard Butler?
He's a Scottish fella that was in 300.
Oh.
So not Gerard.
Gerard.
Gerard. Gerard. Lovely. Well, thank you so much for coming in,
You're
Kate.
Very welcome.
It's been lovely to see you. We will bid you a fond farewell now.
Goodbye.
I think. Thank you so much for coming in, and more from Mumsnet again next week, and more ridiculous. You are being unreasonable, and you are not being unreasonable. My absolute favourite thing. So now we're going to hear a track from Jojo.
Oh,
would you tell us what your track is, Jojo?
Well, if we've got the right one, it's Because of the Night by Patsy Smith.
Fabulous!
There it is.
Understand, desire is hunger, is the fire I breathe, love is a banquet on which we feed. Come on now, try and understand the way I feel.
Patti Smith, Because the Night. Fabulous choice there from our guest comedian Jojo Smith. This is Viv Groskop standing in for Lucy Porter. Welcome back again, Jojo.
Yay.
Lovely to see you. I'm loving your choice.
Thank you very much.
Particular emotional connection to that track? Because the Night belongs to lovers.
More that just she's the one person in showbiz older than me, so...
Well, yes, let us talk about your showbiz career. Because you had quite a long route into comedy. Started off in rock and roll journalism.
Punk rock journalism.
Punk rock. I would probably call that rock and roll, but normal people would call it punk.
Big different back in the day.
And you worked with Dexy's Midnight Runners for a time. And then you've gone as a comedian to have sold out tours of South Africa, China, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, and you've appeared at the Sydney and Melbourne comedy festivals, always busy on the circuit. And what are you up to particularly at the moment? Gearing up for Christmas season?
Yeah, getting ready for the Christmas parties. and even more importantly, getting ready for my time off after Christmas, which the Christmas parties pay for. So every year I try and get away and try and get into the sun for a couple of months if possible.
Oh, what a lovely picture of a wonderful life.
So I'm going off to Thailand in February, but actually I'm going to work while I'm out there. I'm doing a tour of Cambodia.
Oh my goodness.
And just waiting to hear back on doing some dates in Vietnam as well, fabulous. Which is fantastic to get paid to be out there.
Yes, and when you say tour, do you mean a one-woman show or what do you tour
It will
now?
Be, yeah. I mean, I'm such a coward. I've been doing stand-up for 22 years at the end of June, and until a month ago I'd never done an hour's show ever, never been on stage for longer than 40 minutes. Because I did a package show in Edinburgh in 1998 I think, and I did it with the Screaming Blue Murder people, and we got a flat provided and everything was done and we got paid, and I just realised that would be the best Edinburgh festival I'd ever have. And I always used to say, I've got nothing I want to say badly enough to spend 10 grand saying it. But of course, the reality was it was fear. It's always been fear. It's what if nobody comes? What if I get a one-star review? What if, what if, what if? And those things have put me off. So,
oh, I love it. It's gone to quite a dark place now already. Yeah. Very good. Well, yeah. Yes, so you don't seem like a fearful person, though, Jojo.
Well, it's like I'm quite a control freak, and I can't control, you know, if I'm on a mixed bill and nobody comes, well, it's not me, they're rejected.
No, you can blame all the others.
If it says my name on the door and nobody comes, that's me that's being rejected.
Yes.
And you know, stand-up's precarious enough. You know, they can reject you within the space of two jokes.
Yeah.
And so, but then the guy who runs the Sheffield Comedy Festival basically said to me, you're coming and doing an hour. Because I'd played the gig that he runs in Sheffield quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, yeah, why not, you know. But I was still, I was a bag of nerves. And all my fears were faced in that no critics came, so that was all right. And only 11 people bought tickets. So that, what if nobody comes? Well, that's what happens if nobody comes. But one of the people who did come went into the pub where the show was in, like, the back room. She went into the pub and dragged in 20-odd more people. And bizarrely, she was legless, but she managed to find 20 really good people. So I had 30 people in a room that held 60 and had a ball, because I've never had that kind of time, you know. It's like, if you're doing 20 minutes, it's like shorthand, because you've got to just get to the gag, gag, gag. Whereas if you've got an hour, you've got, you can take 5 minutes to get to that one gag, and you can put lots of other little gags in between. And so now I'm thinking I might actually do Edinburgh next year.
Oh, well, you can try it out on the people of Cambodia.
Well, that's what I'm going to do. So I'm going to do it in Siem Reap and Sihanoukville and Kampot and Phnom Penh.
Well, you're down with the lingo already.
Well, I've already been to Cambodia, but I've paid out my own pocket, so it'd be nice to go on somebody else's.
Is there
dollar.
A title or a theme for this show?
Just my life, really.
Okay, JoJo's life. Well, yes. Yeah, so tell us a bit more about this life. Now, you do have a rather lovely voice. Where does the voice come from? Where did you grow up?
Well, all over the shop, kind of. I was a forces child, but not British forces. My dad is from Preston, emigrated to Canada, joined the Canadian Air Force. I should have been born in France, but I was upside down, so we flew to Germany.
This is not the answer I was expecting.
I know. So born in Germany, but with Canadian passport and everything else till about 10 years ago, and they decided it was just easier to be British. And then when I was 9, we came to England for a holiday. My mum went, right, make your choice. Who do you want to live with? Because I'm not going back to Canada. So I had to choose. Even though my dad was a lot more fun, even at 9, survival instinct kicked in. And I thought, well, I know who's going to keep my clothes clean and who's going to put dinner on the table. So I picked my mum, and I ended up with this accent because I had to go and live in Preston in Lancashire. And I got my Canadian accent literally beaten out of me, as you do.
Mm.
And but only actually lived in Preston until I was 17 when I left, so 8 years. But
and what did you want to be when you were growing up?
I remember going to the careers office and saying, you know, I was quite interested in being an advertising copywriter because I always liked words. I used to do my own magazines when I was a kid. And this being a Preston secondary school careers officer, she went, have you ever thought about being a nursery nurse? So so we had a little bit of a disagreement there. And then the way I got out, I went to do A-levels, but punk rock had happened, and I wasn't really interested in studying. But I loved English and I love words and all of that. And so me and my mate, we'd sort of read about people doing fanzines in London, this guy Mark P, who started the first punk fanzine, which was Sniffing Glue, and it was like, well, you don't even have to study journalism, you can just write. So we decided we would write, or I would write, because she had a mate who could do the printing. So we
said, this is in the days before the internet,
I'll say, before anybody could chase you up and make sure you're actually legitimate, because not one copy ever appeared. But we said we had this thing, the Ligger, because we didn't want to sleep with the bands. We just wanted to hang out and drink their beer, so we weren't groupies. And the first person we interviewed was Ian Dury, and he took us on his tour bus to Liverpool from Preston. And we did, you know, I asked the questions, my mate wrote them down in longhand, and then I typed them up. And that, when I eventually got to London, got me a job on a music paper, on the same music paper that Paulie Yates started on, a thing called Popstar Weekly.
Wow. So. And you went on to work for Smash Hits, NME, The Face, Record Mirror. Those were the days. Do you think there's a sort of proper music journalism era is now over?
Yeah, because all of music has changed. And, I mean, you've got a copy out there in your reception. The other day I was in town, somebody handed me a copy of the free NME, and it's just heartbreaking. Mm. And why they didn't just fold it, because what they've got now is just like, you know... And I'm not even, like, Glory Days NME. I'm after Julie Burchill and Tony Parsons and all of those people. But even the NME that I wrote for would be turning in its grave. It's just appalling. But, you know, and people don't need it. You know, if you like a band, you type their name into Google and there they are. You don't need the opinion of, you know, some third-rate, non-trained hack. You can make your own opinion. You know, you can hear the music. You don't have to buy the records. You know, we used to have to go into the one decent record shop in town and put the headphones on and listen to all the new releases. You know, you don't have to do that now. You don't have to wait for John Peel just as well, right? Because he's dead. But anyway, but you know, that was where we heard.
John.
That's where we heard music. There was nowhere else. You know, we had to go to Liverpool to see a band, yeah, or Manchester.
Yeah, I wonder though if we are slightly in danger. We're of a generation. We're slightly in danger of being like old farts, saying
God,
it was
totally.
Better in our day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But it was. Yeah. But yeah.
Now, speaking of old farts, I do... No, we're not going to discuss those, don't worry. Although I sense that you probably would go down that route, given half a chance,
no,
Jojo.
I'm not sure.
I want to ask your opinion about this young people's news story that has reached my attention this week. Now, this is an Instagram story. I don't know if people have heard about this. There's a young Australian woman called Esena O'Neill, who's 19, and she made herself over the last 5 years into a big Instagram celebrity, a million followers, a gazillion YouTube people, all of the posting of the I'm not wearing any pants except I am wearing pants, here's my thigh gap selfie nonsense. And she this week made this big announcement to all of her followers saying that she's quitting social media because it's all a sham and all of these posts have been paid for by advertisers because she's wearing their clothes and all of the photos are faked up, she's wearing loads of makeup or she dieted for ages to get into a certain dress and she's sick of lying to people and she wants to be real now and is now posting all of these kind of no makeup selfies. Now this immediately started this whole furore online of people saying yes, Instagram has gone too far and the young people must be stopped and be made to realise that they're egotists. But I just was immediately thinking, well, this seems to be a publicity stunt in itself. And sure enough, today some other ones have come out of the woodwork and said actually she's been planning this and this is her new direction, this is her new brand, is being all natural. Oh, I just think, Jojo, isn't it exhausting?
Because she's still there, isn't she?
Isn't it exhausting?
But she's still on Instagram. All she's done is change the captions. Because I started following her a couple of days ago when I first heard this story.
Oh, you've fallen for it, you see?
Well, because
I've been reeled in.
Because, you know, she is, you know, she didn't even have to do a sex tape to get fame. Because she's the love child of the Kardashians. That's, you know, their whole industry is built on sponsored posts, on, you know, certain angles. You know, we just had our picture taken outside and right away I was like, get the face tune on it. Now, I admit it, it's the best, it's
we
free.
We are going to be the new Kardashians, Jojo.
It's the best app in the world. I just rub all my wrinkles away. I don't really like going out. Not if for real, because I look so much better on Instagram. Because I just rub everything. I mean, I look like I've been in a fire. My skin looks a bit smudged. But yeah, you know, it's. I mean, and it's just quite interesting. It is. It's. You know, I think there is a desire for some kind of realness. But the reality is, if you're young and remotely attractive, how else are you going to make big money?
Well, you know, the problem is as well is that the realness becomes as commodified as the fakeness. So now she's attracting lots of attention. She's posting all these videos of her crying. And it's all about extremes of emotion and extreme aesthetic just to keep people watching.
Well, they can't do anything in private anymore. That's the thing, isn't it? I mean, nobody can live privately, it seems. Certainly younger people, but I'm as bad, I use all of them. But, even, you know, young people certainly live their life on social media. You know, I've got a couple of comedian friends who deliberately aren't on any social media. And sometimes I meet up with them and it's like, I've got nothing to talk about that isn't something that I've read on Facebook or seen on Twitter, or, you know, somebody I've had a fake row with on Twitter or whatever. And they don't have a clue what I'm talking about.
Mm. But there is a bit of a difference, isn't there, from getting all of your news and your information and exchanging tidbits with your friends on... And also people you don't know on Twitter and Facebook, and living your whole life on it, which is what some of these teen Instagram types seem to do.
Yeah, well, because that is their career, you know. I mean, you see the money that's to be made, that Zoella girl and all these other people, you know, they're getting £1 million publishing deals for their life story, which they can't write. They have to pay, you know, somebody else gets paid £10,000 to write it and they get the £1 million. And, you know, because she hasn't had a life. She's 23. But, you know, it's like chicken and egg. Is that what the market wants, or is that what the market being told they want?
Mm.
Eventually, you know, and yeah, and presumably realness is the new thing, you know. I mean, God forgive me, I read Mail online. I would never buy the Daily Mail, but I love it while it's free. And there's a pitch thing today about an anorexic. This girl got to 5 stone, nearly died. Now she's got some weight back on, she's healthy, and there's pictures of her bum and her belly, and oh, and I'm going to post these pictures, and it's like the thrill she got out of displaying her anorexic body, she's now getting the same thrill, the same validation, because she can't just go away and do it in private, because it's like if you're not on media, you don't exist.
Yes, it's terrible.
Or is now, it? Maybe it's just life.
Deep. It's deep. We've gone very deep. Now, before we get to the next track, I'm just going to remind people that we're asking you to tweet about the women that you would like to see on the UK passport, because there are only 2 of them out of 9 persons, and it's not enough. Jojo, who would you like to see on this? Women from the last 500 years, British women. Jane Austen is missing. Mary Wollstonecraft, Virginia Woolf. Who would you have liked to see?
Joanna Lumley.
Oh, what a great suggestion. Let's send that in. Send it into the authorities. Fabulous. Now, next track, Amanda. What have we got coming up now?
We'll have another Jess Glynn one.
Yay, I love Jess Glynn.
I have queued up Right Here. And are you happy with that choice?
I love that choice. Let's have Right Here, Right Here.
I didn't think this life was gonna be for me. I love you gave me to discover was right here. But now I'm caught up in a dream, don't wanna leave. See, I ain't been one for wishing, not at all. When you least expect, it's creeping up on you. No confiding nor abiding to no rules. And now I'm content knowing that I'm here with you. You got me where you want me, now I'm right here. Waiting for your calling, now I'm right here. You got me where you want me. It's creeping up on you. No confiding nor abiding to no rules. And now I'm content knowing that I'm there with you. Finally, I'm content. Oh, yes, I found that.
was Jess Glynn with Right Here from our album of the week. This is Viv Groskop standing in on the Lucy Porter Show, and I'm here with comedian Jojo Smith. Now, we were just discussing this week's controversial topic about the lack of women depicted in the UK passport, and Jojo was brilliantly suggesting that Joanna Lumley should have been on there. Our suggestion from our Mumsnet guest, Kate Williams, was... who was her suggestion? Oh, Florence Nightingale. Yes, absolutely. Brilliant, brilliant. Now, my suggestion, I'm going to be very controversial here, very seminal woman of the last 500 years, Margaret Thatcher. Why couldn't she be there? That would make people very frightened at passport control across the world, wouldn't it? Now, I do want to ask you about this Margaret Thatcher story that's come out this week, Jojo. I don't know if you've read about this, that the Victoria and Albert Museum has rejected a very generous offer to showcase Margaret Thatcher's wardrobe as a fabulous museum exhibit. And this has caused a bit of controversy because some people think that this would actually be quite a valuable thing to exhibit. Social history, very interesting. I can see it being part of a whole amazing exhibit of perhaps 1970s and 1980s political fashions. But my favourite thing about this is their statement, which says, the V&A politely declined the offer of Baroness Thatcher's clothes, feeling that these records of Britain's political history were best suited to another collection, which would focus on their intrinsic social historical value. The museum is responsible for chronicling fashionable dress, and its collecting policy tends to focus on acquiring examples of outstanding aesthetic or technical quality.
They're right. Last one I saw there was the Alexander McQueen. Yeah, I can't really see her pussycat bows and her blue... Well, always those suits always look like they were made of like Trevira or crimpoline. They look like if a natural fibre went near it, it would just burst into flames.
But Jamie, I think that this is a bit of a missed opportunity because I think even bad fashion should be celebrated and commemorated so that we remember how bad it was.
I think we've all got memories, love. I don't think we need to see that. And it wasn't even fashion, though, was it? It was just what women of a certain age wore. It wasn't... Nobody else was really... If she was like Joan Collins, you know, big shoulder pads...
That would have looked incredible, by the way.
Well, yeah, I'd have probably voted for her if she'd have been dressing like Alexis in Dynasty. But do you know what I mean? That, to me, is like 80s power dressing. She was a very tame, man-made fibre version of all of that.
Oh, you see, I feel really left out now because it's just me, isn't it? Yeah. I quite like her iconic look. I like a pussycat bow. I like a helmet hair.
I mean, you could say, the thing is, it is an iconic look. So even though it's not something that I would aspire to, it is, you know, it's very much of the era.
It's evocative. Yeah.
And so I'm actually with you there. It should be...
I think I'm the only person who would have gone to this exhibition, but I would have gone to it many times. I don't think that would be enough to keep the V&A afloat.
There must be, maybe put it, I don't know, could go in another museum, but yeah, not the V&A.
The Museum of Poor Quality Goods.
Yeah. There must be a man-made fibres museum, Corby or somewhere.
There is perhaps a museum that is going to spring up, and you could go and see it on your travels when you take your tour to Cambodia. I'm not sure my geography is going to write it. Well, apparently, a number of Baroness Thatcher's suits and dresses went on auction in 2012 and were bought by an anonymous bidder in South Korea.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah.
I love the idea of this person in South Korea who has built a shrine.
Korea. I'm surprised old Kim Jong-un hasn't bought it. He seems to be a dictator along those lines.
Well, it could be a double bluff, couldn't it?
Yeah.
It could
have been. He might. She might have been bidding on his behalf.
Yes.
Yeah, no.
All right, well, I'll give up on my idea for Thatcher, a fashion legacy, the exhibition.
There's a museum in Preston. They could put it in there. If it's still open, if the Tories haven't closed it down like they did everything else.
Ooh, controversial. Now, I do want to ask you, Jojo, we were talking before about your upcoming tour and your journey from being a punk rock journalist to becoming a comedian. Tell us about how you ended up becoming a comedian, because it wasn't something you did from, say, your early 20s, was it?
No, I was... when I did my first gig, I was 33. And what had happened was I got, in the first Gulf War, kids, I got repetitive strain injury.
in my arm, well, in my hands, and then it spread. And I wasn't pulling any triggers. I worked on the television page of the Evening Standard, and they had to keep changing the TV schedules because if there was a war film on or something, that had to be pulled. And because I live nearest to the Evening Standard, I had to be in all that. And I gave up smoking, so I wasn't taking my fingers off a keyboard for like 8 hours at a time.
Let this be a warning. Never to you, Instagrammers. Beware, RSI.
And I'd heard stories about, oh, people get RSI and they get the sack because all this technology coming in Australia, and bang, loads of people lost their jobs. So I didn't say anything, and in the end I was walking with a limp. And I went to the NUJ and they went, oh, we'll get you £500,000. You come off work now and we'll sue them, and da 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 da. And then what they did was get me the sack.
Oh,
so
dear.
So I went from being a proper yuppie, earning my age in thousands, to living on £50 a week. Mm-hmm. And then people, actually James Brown, late of Loaded Magazine, now Sabotage Times, was going out with a mate of mine, and he kept going, you're funny, I know funny, I know Vic and Bob. And I went, well, I know them too, it doesn't make me a comedian. But anyway, no paper was ever going to employ me again. So I thought, well, I'll have a go and I'll be rubbish and everybody will shut up, because I'd never been on a stage. And I was rubbish, but I loved that power of having a microphone. It was, and I was getting, I mean, most of the laughs I got the first time were at me, because I was legless. My mates thought it'd be really funny to buy me triple vodka for when I went on stage. It was a wonder I could see the stage. But yeah, you know, I think, and by then I was already a woman of a certain age, because I was in my 30s. And it is, it's very seductive, you know, the attention that you get, and it's on your terms, and people have to listen, even if it's only for 20 minutes.
Mm.
You know, it's quite nice. It's been the easiest, in terms of people that I work with and stuff, it's been the easiest ride ever, you know. All the other industries I'd worked in, there's so many crackpots.
I do love a happy ending to a repetitive strain injury story.
Well, and do you know the weirdest thing was, not long after I got the sack, I started smoking again and it went away. And then I gave up 8 years ago, and the minute I gave up, it came back in my hands.
Whoa.
And I had to have my carpal tunnels removed, which they didn't do the first time. And when I went to the hospital, I said, you know, this is twice I've given up smoking and twice this has happened. Maybe nicotine does something. And I went, you know, I'm not saying I'm not going to start smoking again, but there must be something there, because I wasn't typing or anything as much. And oh, no, there's no proof. But, you know, there is.
Well, there obviously is. We've said it here now.
Yeah.
Yes, more research into nicotine and carpal tunnel syndrome. Yes, alongside the putting more women in the passports. Now, in your comedy, Jojo, you are known for, I don't want to say using rude language, but yes, sometimes
I'm
using...
Ribald. Yes, ribald. I'm ribald. Not sure how you pronounce it.
And you have a ribald counterpart on the American scene in comedian Margaret Cho. Who is one of my favourites, actually. I follow her on Facebook and she is fantastic and is regularly troubling YouTube with her offensive diatribes of one kind or another, if you find that kind of thing offensive. Now, she has apparently now bust the last taboo by releasing a new song about rape, except she hasn't quite released it yet. She's at the moment doing this thing called 12 Days of Rage, where she's doing a countdown to releasing her new song, which is called I Want to Kill My Rapist. It's very subtle. But the latest one that she has that she's released this week has caught my eye. It's called Fat Pussy. And it's all about apparently being positive about your body.
Right.
And it includes the lyric, nothing better, nothing wetter. And as it reports in The Guardian, Cho, aged 46, has spent her career making outrageous jokes about her vagina. But it has still taken her years to feel at ease about her body. And I'm not sure Fat Pussy is going to go any way to helping anyone with that, but it seems to have helped.
Well, women
helped
have
her.
Liposuction, don't they? Even women have been made to feel that bad about their bodies that they have liposuction on their pudenda.
Yes, excellent use of that word.
And,
yes.
And, you know, designer vaginas and all of that. I mean, you know...
Yes. Leave it alone, that's
well,
what I say.
But it's just, you know, that hatred towards your own body that we're being that's being encouraged by somebody out there.
Yes.
Probably plastic
I don't
surgeon.
Want to ask you, Amanda, if we could have a snatch of the
I think you just did.
Snatch of the fat
but
pussy.
I think I just have.
I think we can play the whole thing, actually. Let's
brace yourselves.
Right, here we go.
It's like a
I don't know why.
It's like a mime in song form. Oh, I'm so sorry, we couldn't hear.
The male oppresses.
The fat pussy. Yes, we've been censored.
Stamping on the fat pussy.
Has been censored and not allowed.
Ah, no, Laura's just pointed out the problem. It's because the...
You haven't pressed play.
It was muted on the computer. Here we go. I'm going to start it from the very beginning.
Yay.
Live radio, guys. Here we go.
And a mean streak. Ride with me and you're rolling deep. Squirt you like a spray tan. How's you like a camper van? Nothing better, nothing wetter. Gonna get her, send a letter to my
by Margaret Cho. I'm loving hearing my name after the Fat Pussy song. This is Viv Groscott standing in on the Lucy Porter Show on FUBAR. Welcome back to Jojo Smith, our fabulous guest. What are your thoughts on Fat Pussy? I love the way I said that, like John Humphreys, didn't I? What are your thoughts on Fat Pussy?
Do you mean the song or do you mean Fat Pussy in general? Because in general, there's nothing wrong with a fat pussy, but I wouldn't... do you know what that seemed like? That seemed like a little girl trying to be a bit shocking, or a little boy showing his willy at a party. It just...
Yes.
It's actually not... It's not, you know...
It didn't really go anywhere,
it's not
going to
kill any rapists.
No.
And it's a bit twee, the singing.
I quite like the lyric, "My ass is white, my tongue is tied." But apart from that, it doesn't really go anywhere. But it's interesting that I think a lot of comedians now are having to release all of these viral videos because it's so difficult to get attention for your work now. And you know, Margaret Cho is releasing, I think, a new track every day for this 12 Days of Rage. And a lot of it isn't, I think, as funny as possibly it could be. And it's obviously not, she's coming to London in December to do her show, which I can't wait to see, but it's not going to go into her show, the fat pussy, I don't think.
Well,
it's just another thing to put on YouTube.
Well, and also, she must be feeling a bit put out that she's been doing this kind of stuff for quite a while, and then along comes Amy Schumer, and suddenly Amy Schumer is the future of comedy and the past and the present and everything. And now she, and so she's almost having to run to catch up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that is what happens. People, you know, it's like, oh, they weren't, you know, I remember seeing Thea Vidal, you know, 25 years ago doing stuff that was way funnier, stronger and better than anything Amy Schumer or Margaret Cho's ever done.
Well,
but she got her nowhere.
High hopes for the forthcoming song, I Want to Kill My Rapist.
We wait for the release of that.
Now, speaking of unusual things from the internet, Jojo, I was looking up, I was cyber stalking you, looking for information, and I discovered this extraordinary tome on Amazon, which is a Kindle book called The Adventures of Jojo Smith. And I thought, how interesting that Jojo should write a book about herself. Then I realised it's not by you or about you at all. It's by someone called Tony Leslie Duxbury, and it's a Kindle adventure book featuring a zombie knight called Jojo Smith. And its description is, this is a light-hearted and amusing fantasy about a young man who's accidentally transported to an alien world. It is a medieval world, as well as being alien world, and the magician who pulled him from his own world was only practicing.
That's why it's a Kindle publication and not a Stodder and Horton.
Did you know about this extraordinary tribute
I didn't, and what's really scary is it looks like Michael Jackson in the picture.
It does.
That's even more frightening.
Yes,
that, you know,
I love the it just has the one review, this book. please go out and read it, do download it. The review says, I hovered between 3 and 4 stars for this book. If I could give half stars on Amazon, I think it would be a 3.5. I love the pedantic nature of that. And the person says, what I liked, it was very much told in the first person. I got to read every single thought that passed through Jojo's mind. Not always sweet and innocent thoughts, but certainly always believable. Here's one of my favourite examples of Jojo's thoughts. Pretend you have nerves of steel and wash your underpants later. Then this person adds, overall, I enjoyed this story. I would recommend it to anyone who is looking for a fantasy that doesn't take itself too seriously.
Oh.
What a great recommendation.
Oh, dear.
I'm really glad I brought that to your attention.
Sums up everything that's wrong with fantasy.
Now, we will recover from that particular digression. I'm sorry to have...
I have enough trouble with the real world,
I'm sorry to have drawn your zombie aliens. Michael Jackson self. I'm going to proceed to a problem in a moment, which comes from the agony aunt part of my life. I moonlight as the agony aunt on the pool, where I answer questions to Dear Viv. But before we go to that question, I'm just going to say a big thank you to Chelsea L. Berlin, who has tweeted us about ideas for women to go in the UK passport, because as we were reporting earlier, there's only 2 women out of 9 possibles who are being included in the UK passport. And Chelsea, who I assume is a lady, but I don't want to make any assumptions in 21st century, it could also be a man, who knows. We love you, Chelsea, whoever and whatever you are. She recommends Vivian Westwood and Mary Quant.
Fabulous.
Yeah,
Vivian Westwood,
brilliant.
Great.
Go great along.
What a brilliant name as well, Chelsea Berlin.
I know, lovely.
She should be
Chelsea
hanging out
L.
with
Berlin.
Velvet Underground. Fabulous. Or something.
Now, to recover from the shock of the zombie Jojo, let's go to a question about alcohol. This because we can't drink any because you're on the green tea.
Only because I'm boring. I sometimes drink.
I was just hoping you were going to get completely drunk and disgrace yourself.
Oh, well, that would probably happen if I had enough to drink.
Yes.
But I'm not 12-stepping or anything.
But, well, we'll see what you think to this question then. I received this question on the podcast this week, and I have replied to it, and it's been broadcast, but I'm not entirely sure I got the answer right. So the question is this. Dear Viv, I need a glass of wine every night. Do I have a problem?
Well, you do if you haven't got any wine, yeah. I can't drink wine at all, so she's better than me, because it turns to vinegar on my tongue. The only fights I've ever had in my life have been when I've drunk wine.
Wow. Oh, I love. Tell us about the fights.
Oh, no, one was with an ex. Oh, no. And that was my last ever ex, actually. That was
Do
enough to put me off
ex,
relationships.
As in ex-person?
Ex, like you, well,
you
he's ex to me.
Person.
I killed what he thought I thought of him because I'd heard stories about his behaviour before we met and kept it to myself. And then when I got drunk on wine, I told him everything. And he looked like I'd stabbed him. I used to blame booze. It's because I was drunk. And on stage, sometimes I talk about it and I say, I thought that drinking made me be a word beginning with C. And when I stopped drinking, I realised I am a word beginning with C. But when I'm sober, I can keep my mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
So drink isn't to blame. Drink just loosens the thoughts that are already in my head, and they're dangerous as it is. So.
But Amanda, what do you think about this idea? If you need a glass of wine every night, is that a problem?
No, because if you're just stopping at one glass, then it's what it's supposed to be quite beneficial to your health, isn't it, to have a glass of wine in the evening?
This is really the alcoholic's excuse.
If it's red, but would maybe have a problem at just sticking to one glass, because once the bottle's open, you can keep it in another room, but you still keep walking back to that other room and then just topping up and topping up. So
I love this thought of how you live at home. There's a bottle of wine in the other room.
Just in the toilet.
You go in two rooms.
You go into every room and there's an open bottle in every room.
That would be quite a good idea, actually.
That's the scary
bit.
Well,
this is the interesting thing. That's what I say.
If I enjoy a glass of wine, that's a whole different matter. But if you need, what's in her life that makes her need wine at a certain time every day?
Exactly. Well, that's how I answered this, because need is a very specific thing. It's not I'm drinking a glass of wine every night, it's I need. And also, I think define glass as well.
Yeah, because you can get some buckets now, can't you?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the bottle's glass, isn't it?
And do I have a problem? Well, you've written into an Agni aunt, and you think so. You're sort of already self-diagnosing there.
I think she's fine. Crack on.
I think she's a bit lonely.
Is it you? Did you write in?
If I could stop at one glass, then I don't see that as being a problem. I think that, and is she having it with her dinner?
I don't think she's having it with a dinner.
So you think I should have replied, no, you are just French.
Crack on.
Very good. Okay.
Does she say what she does?
No.
Now I want to know everything.
These questions come in and I don't have enough information sometimes to go on this. But I've said it depends on the size of the glass. It depends what you mean by need. But do think about the fact that you're writing in and asking, maybe you need to.
She doesn't need it first thing in the morning, though, does she? She's not waking up.
You're
when
really on
say,
the side of this woman, aren't you?
Every night.
I'm like, is that 365 days a year? Because that's quite hardcore.
Well, she only has one glass of wine at Christmas. She's fine then, isn't she? I mean, who has one glass of wine at Christmas?
She might need one, but she might have several. She's probably a lush.
Yes.
She's probably sitting in squalor, cat hair and cat mess.
Sounds
everywhere.
Like my kind of lady.
Dirty duvet.
Amanda's revealed a lot about herself. Let's try one more problem here now. I like this one as well. Dear Viv, two of my friends have fancied each other for a while and recently kissed on a night out.
Aww.
The only problem is I'm the only mutual friend connecting them.
Ooh.
Last time this same girlfriend got involved with another friend of mine, it ended with me never speaking to my guy friend again. Ooh. Their messy breakup was his fault, but still. I don't want to say they can't get together, as I know this is how people meet and it's none of my business, but I know I'm going to end up in a bad situation if they do. Help.
Well, I think she just needs to stay out of whatever goes on with them, doesn't she? She just needs to say to both of them, you two do, you know, good luck to you, but I don't want to hear anything about your relationship.
Correct. I'm so glad you would say that. That's exactly what I said. Because it's a bit controlling, isn't it? Once two people have got together, that no man can cast them asunder.
Yeah.
That's in the wedding vows, isn't it? I paraphrase.
I'm not blessed.
But no, you can't come between two... Oh, I'm sorry, unfortunate choice of words there. But you can't go between two people who have decided to be together.
She can't stop it.
No.
And yeah, all she can do is remove herself from the bitching and whining at the end when it, you know, when it all goes wrong.
Yeah. So yes, if her friend wants to call her and complain about the guy, then she's going to have to say... Call Sarah or something.
Not me. Yeah.
Yes, but I have said keep well away, don't get involved, and definitely don't get involved if it starts to go wrong. Mm. But if it goes really well, then take massive credit.
Of course, yeah, at the wedding, you want to be able to do a speech.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. If it wasn't for me, these two would be spinsters.
Because I was introduced to my husband by a very good friend a long time ago in another century, because I have been married for 15 long years. Hello, Simon. And this friend of ours, Berna, who introduced us, she is like a god to us. Because she, you know, she has created our love and our small children. And we do treat her like a great deity, because if it were not for her, then we would not have got together. So I wonder if this person could end up becoming a god to someone.
But she just needs to stay, keep her beak out until it gets to the wedding vows.
Yeah, I so want to come from Preston. Keep your beak out. I love that.
Can I just say, I love the pool. I didn't know you wrote for that.
Oh, yeah, the pool is very good. Yeah. Yes, we love the pool. Now, we're going to have another fabulous track now, Amanda. What have we got left to play?
We are going to play something that I have chosen for today.
Ooh, it's Amanda's choice.
It's Amanda's choice. It is, I was...
Sell it hard, Amanda.
I was... when JoJo was talking...
Amanda?
I think I might have been a bit...
Was this a white wine choice?
I usually am two drinks in by now on this show, as regular listeners will know that we do. But I had quite enough of that last night, so I'm feeling a bit tender today. But this song is going to pep me up. I took inspiration from JoJo's Punk Pass. It's X-Ray Specs. Oh, Bondage Up Yours.
Hey.
Some people think little girls should be seen and not heard, but I think... Oh, Bondage Up Yours! 1, 2, 3, 4!
Bondage,
favourite for X-Ray Specs and Oh Bondage Up Yours. This is Viv Groskop standing in on the Lucy Porter Show. If only I had been around in those days to be a singer when all you had to do was just shout, Oh Bondage Up Yours! I could have been a great singer.
I think she's got a great voice.
There was other stuff that on that Joan Free Adolescence album, that title track, Her Voice Is Quite Sweet, God Rest Her Soul, She's Dead. But yeah, it was good. Yeah, no, I was in a band in the punk days. Everybody was in a band.
Now we are here with our guest comedian JoJo Smith, who was in her day a legend of the punk era.
Punk rock goddess, me.
Yes.
Mate.
Now you've already name dropped a few of your pals from that time, but who were the most inspiring and interesting people around that time?
God, inspiring and interesting.
The Clash.
The Clash, definitely. Yeah, the Clash were. But all the whole ethos of it was that you didn't have to go to university, you didn't have to be, you know, a virtuoso on the guitar to pick up a guitar, you didn't have to be the best singer to be a singer, you know, you didn't have to be trained to be a writer, and you know,
it's
and that
just
kind
like
of
the X
right
Factor,
through.
Isn't it?
Except that. A bit more longevity, even for the Clash. It was just quite liberal. I mean, I was just the right age, and I'm sure people who came of age in the 60s, when you know the whole sex and love and free love and drugs and all that came around, I'm sure they would say they were born at the right time. But you know, I was 16 when Johnny Rotten swore on the telly, and that was just the perfect age.
Yeah, there were some amazing iconic women around at that time.
Susie Sue, yeah.
Do you think that there are any women who represent that kind of spirit now, or has it all become too homogenised and commercialised?
Well, there's not a lot to be angry about anymore, is there? Well, there should be, but people are so busy staring at their little screens in their hands that they don't see anymore. I mean, there's actually way more injustice and poverty and everything else now than there was back then.
Testifying, JoJo.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, everybody's just, you know, there's a lot more distractions now. Mm. So there should be, you know, I mean, in a way, people like Adele should be singing about more than, you know, boyfriends that have let her down.
She could sing about anything apart from that, couldn't she, really?
Well, you'd think.
Let alone social injustice. Just not singing about boyfriends letting her down would be a change, wouldn't it?
I think the latest one is about a boyfriend that let me down. She's run out of her own.
Well, you see, that's the trick of her beautiful songs, though. We all think they're about us.
Oh, man, if I'd have had a breakup when that last album came out, oh, man, there wouldn't be any vinyl left in the world, I'd play them out.
Do you think that there's any spirit of punk that is left now at all, or that it could come back again, or do you think it was very specific to that place and time?
Yeah, well, it can't come back as it was, because, you know, who knows? Who knows? I'm not of that age, so I don't know what 16-year-olds are getting up to. I mean, they always said, like, the rave thing was the next thing after punk and the warehouses and all of that. You know, it would be great to think that there was kids out there plotting and scheming and planning to overthrow the government and society. You know, we thought we were going to do it, didn't happen, but there you go. Got some great tunes.
I have high hopes of Anton from The X Factor. He will save us all with his wild eyes. He's a wild-eyed one.
Oh, I haven't seen one in the papers with lipstick on.
That's the pencil skirt man, I call him. Sean, that's his name.
Sean.
He's wonderful. He always wears a pencil skirt.
Right.
And he sang David Bowie. Was it a David Bowie track that he sang? Anyway, he's rather wonderful. He's a bit punk, actually. Yes. Oh, no. Only to someone like me. And as you can tell from my voice, I'm not very punk. Now, speaking of different times of life when one is no longer a punk, I do want to put this question to you, JoJo, that I have received at Dear Viv at the pool. I was saying earlier that I am Agony Aunt at the pool website. And people write in with such questions, and lots of them are about navigating life's changes and being a bit sort of old and boring, right? No offence, that's me. Now, this one is very interesting. Dear Viv, my friend is desperate to settle down and have kids. One problem, she hasn't even had a date in 4 years.
Oh.
She's lost her confidence. She continuously goes on and on about wanting kids and a man, but honestly won't even try online dating. We have all offered to go to events with her, etc., to meet people. I love that, etc. But she continues to dodge it, which would be fine if she didn't rant on about it all the time. What can we do to help her confidence?
Number one, I don't think it's the friend. I think it's her. Because why would you bother writing in about your
friend? Very good point,
genius,
Jojo.
It's always, you know, I need this cream for my friend.
My friend. back to the fat pussy.
Sorry. Internet dating, I had a go, but it's a bit different now, I think, because now you can just swipe. We had to talk on MSN. But the amount of people that I met who didn't look like the pictures they sent was terrifying. And you talk online and you think, oh, we've got this real rapport, this could be the one. And it started, I used to meet them for dinner, and then that was really depressing because I go home and cry. And then I started meeting them for lunch, and then even that was too much commitment, so I would start meeting them at 11 o'clock for a coffee, so I had enough time to go shopping afterwards. It cost me a fortune in handbags, so that's when I stopped. I just bought a rabbit.
Well, I don't know if I could reply that to this person. Tell your friend to buy a rabbit.
Get a rabbit. Isn't there?
Amanda, what do you make of that? I wonder about this as well. Does she really want to settle down and have kids, or is that something that she just tells her friends who have done that to make them feel better about themselves?
I'm in the position where a lot of my friends are settled down with children, and I'm not. And
you're
I know
it to me
I'm a,
again.
I'm a lady
all
who.
That wine you're drinking.
Well, yeah. Well, possibly, but it's not. It's something that I don't think about because there's no point. Because I'm not currently seeing anybody, so why would I even go there and think about? Oh, I really want this. I think that she needs to focus, the friend needs to focus on some other aspects of her life that she might enjoy and get her head round a future without. It might not happen. And to get her head around that and to think about the positives. Think about all the lovely holidays she can go on.
Think about all the lovely wine she can drink.
Think about wine in every room. You can't do that when you've got kids.
No, because you have to put a special top on the wine, don't you? Sometimes you can't get it off then.
But
I think, if all your friends have got kids, it's probably... Because you know what? I reached a point where all my friends had kids.
Yeah, because you don't have kids.
I know, I'm dry as a husk. And, we've only got 1 minute, though. It's a long story. Anyway, so yes, I would say she's probably just saying it for something to say.
Well, this is the thing, isn't
get
it? It's very difficult, the dynamic between single friends and friends with kids. And I think she might just be being nice. And actually is very happy with her wine-drinking single life. So, butt out.
I mean, my friend's children are obviously lovely, but if I go there and spend time, I think, oh, God, I'm exhausted. And I say to my friend, I'm like, you must be exhausted. You just must be, because you don't stop. It never stops.
But so you're not allowed to sell them on the internet, are you? So I think they just, if they're yours, you're stuck there, you know? Whereas if, like me, you have the choice to walk away, you think, why would you do that?
Yeah.
If she really wanted it, she'd have them.
Yes, too right. Well, thank you so much, comedian Jojo Smith, our wonderful guest today. You've been fabulous. Thank you to Amanda and Laura for being so fabulous in the studio, and to our other guest, deputy editor of Mumsnet, Kate Williams. I've been Viv Groskop, standing in for Lucy Porter. Hope to see you again soon. And let's hear our last track from the album of the week from Jess Glynn.
I thought we'd have the track Take Me Home because we're all going...
Yes, how beautiful. Home? Take me home for wine.
Wrapped up, so consumed by all this hurt. If you ask me, don't know where to start. Anger, love, confusion, roads that go nowhere. I know there's somewhere better, 'cause you always take me there. Came to you with a broken faith, gave me more than a hand to hold. Called before I hit the ground. You've got me now. Would you take the wheel if I lose control? If I'm lying here, will you take me home?
more you talk to me. You rationalize my darkest thoughts, yeah, you set them free. Came to you with a broken faith, gave me more than a hand to hold. Caught before I hit the ground, tell me I'm safe, you got me now. Make it better in time, we'll make it heal. I won't be lost forever, and soon I wouldn't feel like I'm haunted or falling. You say space will make it better in time, we'll make it heal. I won't be lost forever, and soon I wouldn't feel like I'm haunted or falling. Take the wheel if I lose control, if I'm lying here.